Welcome to On the Mic Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, I sat down with comedian Jordan Mazzioti. I've got to know Jordan over about the last year or so via Facebook, but this interview was the first time we'd actually met in person. I've really enjoyed Jordan's comedy from what I've been able to see through some of the videos and stuff that's posted, as well as some of his Facebook statuses. I've also really enjoyed the comedy blog that Jordan writes, where he helps promote the Salt Lake comedy scene, as well as promote upcoming stand-ups, and share some great interviews. The blog is called It's Always Funny in Salt Lake City. Definitely check that out. Jordan has a great upcoming show that he actually put together. It's a comedy showcase featuring some of the best comics in Salt Lake City, from Jay Whitaker, Jason Harvey, B-Real Robinson, Abby Harrison, Michael Schooley, Jackson Banks, Nicholas Smith, and Jordan Mazzioti himself will be hosting the show. I know so many of you out there love great stand-up like I do, and this is going to be a show that by no means are you guys going to want to miss. I talked to Jordan as well throughout this episode about, you know, kind of how he got started in comedy, what his process is, a little bit of the family life as well, mixed into everything. If you guys have not noticed yet, we finally have expanded our reach to all of you. Most of you have only been able to listen to the show via iTunes or through the website. You can now download On the Mic Podcast through Stitcher Radio. We've really appreciated the support we've received, not just from all of you listening to Stitcher, but as well from Stitcher itself. As you know, they, as soon as we got posted up on there, they started tweeting out about it and really gained a lot of new fans for us. So I hope all of you new fans are really enjoying the show. I apologize for the little bit of delay we've had between interviews. Salt Lake Comic Con Fan X experience happened in the middle of April and really took me away from a lot. You know, it was an incredible experience. I was able to moderate the panel for the Geek Show podcast. Hopefully we'll be able to release that soon here. We understand that there was a little bit of compromised audio, and so we don't know how well that is going to come out. But if I am able to release that to you guys soon, I will definitely make sure that we do. And I'm really hoping that, you know, come September, when the big Comic-Con event happens, it will also be part of that. Hopefully be able to do a couple of live shows there. I'm trying to work out the details on that right now. So we'll keep you posted on that. I'd love to see so many of you guys come out. Thank you again for all of the support on my web show, The Job Interview. We've really appreciated just all of the kind remarks that we've been seeing on the pilot episode. We also had shot a short film called Roommates that was selected for the Salt Lake Comic Con Laugh Out Loud Film Festival. We received great reviews of that as well. So thank you so much for all of the support. Within 2 days, on May 13th, Tuesday, May 13th, you will be able to watch episode 2 of The Job Interview. We're really excited about this episode. It's an absolutely crazy episode, and we are very excited for you guys to see it. We finally wrapped up filming on The Job Interview a couple weeks ago, kind of putting things on a bit of a hiatus while Johnny and Austin have both head out to St. Louis for the summer. I've got a couple short films I'm getting ready to start on here in Salt Lake, as well as, you know, trying to, you know, get my ass out a lot more to open mics and get the stand-up going a lot more. So thank you guys so much for all of your support with this. I really think you guys are going to enjoy this episode. Jordan is just a fantastic comic, just all around great guy. So I hope that you guys are able to make it out to the show on May 25th. It's at Keys on Main in Salt Lake City. If you've never been to Keys on Main, it's by far one of my favorite venues in Salt Lake City. So definitely get down there, check it out, enjoy some great comedy for such a cheap price too. Only $8 if you buy tickets now, $10 at the door. And for that lineup, that is just such an incredible lineup of comedians that you are not going to want to miss this. I know a lot of you guys know Jay Whitaker, for as he's been on this show. Abby Harrison, who's also on the show, is going to be on next week's episode. And, you know, we have a lot more great episodes coming up. I'm in the process of setting up just a ton of some fantastic comedians and entertainers right now. So stay tuned for those. Thank you again for all the support. Make sure you do go like On the Mic Podcast on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at On the Mic Podcast. Make sure you go find Jordan Mazzioti as well. Make sure you go like It's Always Funny in Salt Lake City on Facebook and Twitter. And enjoy this episode with Jordan Mazzioti. So now, I know we've been Facebook friends for
6-7 months.
Yeah, 6-7 months at least. So I've always seen all of your stand-up stuff, so I'm glad that we finally can meet in person and find and learn more about the comedy and stuff that you've been doing. So now, did you primarily start at Wise Guys?
Yeah, I started back in November of 2012.
Okay.
And I did probably Wise Guys almost I just did their open mics to start like everybody else. For probably 6-7 months. And then I kind of started branching out a little bit, hitting some of the other shows, some of the other open mics, like the Complex one, and just kind of, you know, trying to meet more people and stuff like that. So I like Wise Guys because I think their crowds are more, at least on open mics, I think their crowds are more willing to laugh a lot of the time. Because the Complex, back in when the Complex was going on, you'd go and a lot of the time you wouldn't know if your jokes were funny or not. You just like tell them and you're like, wow. Okay, so I'll try that somewhere else and see if it works.
But I think that's the joy of Facebook and Twitter now, is that you can throw a joke out there and see how that works right away.
Right.
And then kind of that's at least what I've started doing, is throwing them out there.
Yeah, you have to make sure when you do a Twitter joke and it goes to Facebook, because I had this one joke that I thought was really, really funny, but when it switched over to Facebook, it changed the URL to like those coded URLs like t.co.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm like, well, great. I lost that joke. I got no likes because people didn't understand the URL, messed it up. It was about have you heard the website farmersonly.com?
Yeah, the farmers dating
farmers
site.
Site. And so I had written the joke, farmers.com is less a dating site and more of a family reunion site, but then it got all messed up, so I'm like,
I like that, though.
But yeah, I think I have like a 4-like minimum. If a joke gets under 4 likes, I usually don't use it.
Yeah, I mean, even the joke I posted this morning, I didn't think it was that funny. I more or less just wanted to tell my story that I was telling you about the cops and everything this morning, and just simply posted that after the whole thing that I barely wet myself. So I was proud that I barely wet myself. I was like, yeah, it's a weak joke. It's got like 40 likes already. I'm like, what the hell? I'm like,
body functions work. They really do.
I'm like, I spent time to write some of these jokes that I'll get like 5 or 6 likes on. And then, yeah, I make a pee my pants joke and 40 likes just like that.
What the heck? So are you thinking about, are you writing to do stand-up? Have you done it before?
I've done a handful of open mics. Mm-hmm. So, like, really, really spotty. Mm-hmm. And I've just finally been in the mindset that I just have to just start making myself do it every single week and hitting up as many as possible.
Right.
So, because otherwise I'm just going to be that open mic guy that can talk to different comics and stuff, and it's, I don't want it to be that way.
Right, you want to be in the community.
Yeah, and it makes me feel weird when like I'm at Wise Guys or something, and it's like, I've talked to every comic there, I'm friends with a lot of them,
right.
And then it's like, but why am I not up there doing it too? It's like, I know I can write, so why am I not? And so it's finally got to the point where it's just like, I have to do this, I have to force myself to get there and not, you know, watch a rerun of Frasier or something. And
that's cool.
So I'm impressed, though, with how many open mics there are now.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, when I started a year and a half ago, you had Wise Guys and you had the Complex. But now it's like you have Wise Guys, you have Moe's, Sandy Station, which used to be Lumpy South, they're actually starting one next month on Saturdays.
Oh, wow.
And then
You just started one too.
I'm just starting a show, but Be Real started one on Sundays that went for a little bit. I know the guys up in Ogden, once a month they have a show at Bout Time once a week, and they're doing like a Sunday open mic once a month to kind of break up their shows a little bit. And you know, there's one on Saturday at Cafe Neo's, and it's incredible. You can literally get on stage every day.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, especially like while I was out in LA, it's a tough competition to even just get on an open mic. I mean, just for like the Laugh Factory open mic, you have to show up the week before to try to get on the list for the following week. I know the Comedy Store, it's a lottery that they do to get on, and it's like it's great that in Salt Lake we have all those opportunities.
Right.
To be able to grow. I mean, and there's so many great comics now because of that.
Right. Because they have the opportunity to workshop every, multiple times a week. I don't necessarily have that luxury all the time, but you know, you can work out material 4 or 5 times in 1 week and then use it on a show that weekend, which is nice. You can workshop your jokes start right on Monday and it's ready to go by the weekend. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's not. It's great too because yeah, I mean, as you're workshopping it, you can hear where those dead spots are and know where to fix that flow. Right. I know I sent Jay Whitaker a text last night and I was like, dude, I'm just stuck on some of these. Well, you know, where can I make these more fluid? And I just started going through because I wanted them to piece together. I wanted to look at it as, okay, if I was writing for like a 45-minute set, how would I make what I have work together? Right. So that it's not just like, you know, here's a random joke, here's a random joke. And to really make it more fluid. And that's what I love is being able to, you know, if I need to reach out to Jay or I need to reach out to another comic, is that, you know, they're there to just be like, hey, this is what you need to do. And I love that about the community out here is how open everybody is to working together.
It's true because, like, you know, when I first started, like, I went to the Wise Guys open mics, a few others, and, you know, I felt kind of, and when you first start, you bring your family to everything. So I didn't really talk to a lot of people, and I think I was kind of stuck. I felt alone, but, you know, once I kind of reached out, started doing my blog and stuff, started talking to everybody, you know, I realized how accepting and how willing they were to help you workshop jokes, help you with shows, put you on shows, and just overall be like a good friend. You know, I've definitely, some of my best friends now are comics, which is weird.
Yeah.
Because a year and a half ago, you know, I just had my core friends that I'd had for 10 years, and now I have a whole new batch of guys that I'm, and girls that I'm really good friends with. So it's kind of nice, especially when you're in your 30s. It's like, it's hard to meet new people when you're 30s because you have a wife, family, and stuff like that. And so it's nice to kind of get back out there and meet some new people.
Yeah, and I think the joy of it too, especially with comedy and even just being in entertainment, is that everybody you meet, it seems like they're all so happy and they're just overall fun people. Not the people outside of entertainment aren't.
Right.
But I think a lot of us feel like we have to kind of be on. Right. All the time, or at least just have that energy, you know, carrying about. And I think it just makes for a lot more interesting experience, yeah. To say the
least.
You
talk about a lot of really weird things that you wouldn't normally talk about. Like, I was talking with my Nicholas Smith. He's a funny guy, really dark comic, but we were talking about Law & Order SVU and just how my wife is like on a kick, where she watches like 4 episodes per day. And so I think she's trying to tell me how she wants me to kill her. But, and you know, that just came up in like a weird, normal conversation. And it's like, normally you're talking to your neighbor and nothing like that ever comes up. So it's weird stuff happens.
Yeah, I know with working with X96 in the mornings, With Richie, I know I always going to have to be on the ball because he's going to be ready to improv at any given time. Right. And I mean, there have been just some of the funniest moments I've had there. And it's I think it's made me better, not just with comedy, but with improv. Because I know I have to just be able to yes and Richie all morning long.
Right.
So, and just keep the other interns entertained.
Right. It's awesome.
So, I mean, just yesterday morning, I was training a bunch of the new interns and one of them had a lot of tattoos. And Richie randomly mentions, yeah, Tim has a donut tattoo right on his belly button. And she didn't quite realize we were joking at first. And she's like, really? I was like, yeah, it's just right there. It's the Simpsons donut. It's got the sprinkles and everything. I was like, it's weird that when Richie tries to bite it. And she just kept this concerned look. And Richie immediately is like, yeah. He's like, I always try and I always want to get the jelly in there. And we just kept going, and the look on her face finally just got to the point of, these guys are weird. This is how this morning's gonna go, huh?
Do I want to work here?
And it was great because all of them, I mean, it's 5:30 in the morning and they're all getting used to it for the first time, and Richie and I are just like, hey, look at us.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So now you started a year and a half ago. What was it that you said, or was it a year ago? My apologies.
Year
and a half ago. So what was it that really sparked you to start into comedy? Was it something you always wanted to do from when you were a kid, or was it just something that kind of came up that you realized you could do?
It's weird because like I've always loved comedy, loved stand up. You know, I listened to all the Adam Sandler albums when I was a kid. And listened to, you know, loved all that. But it was like the summer of 2012. Like I was at work and we were just talking about one of my jokes is about IKEA opening hotels, which is a real thing. Not many people have heard about it, but they open in these budget hotels, and me and my cubicle neighbor.
I think they
neighbor,
built the hotels in Sochi, right?
Yeah, and the different. Yeah, that's why they were all smelly and broken. But I was just kind of like, I read the article, and then I was just kind of like feeding off my cubicle neighbor, and then like four people came up, like after we had been talking, that had been overhearing us, and just like, dude, that was hilarious. Just like the back and forth that we had had. And then, you know, from there, it's like, okay, I better write that down. And I just kind of became more aware of my surroundings. I think that once you decide you're going to do comedy, you judge everything.
Yeah.
You just kind of look, oh, there's something there. Because I would consider myself more of an observational type of comic. I don't do long stories or anything, but... And so, you know, just come after that, I just kind of driving to work, looking at weird people in cars, weird billboards, and just watching my kids more carefully. And But I've always loved stand-up, and I wish I would have started 10 years ago.
I know the feeling.
And been, because, you know, I've always been like, when I've been in groups with friends, I'm always the inappropriate one that makes everybody laugh, so... I should have started earlier.
No, I know how that goes. I had started with music, and I'd done a little bit of acting, just doing like really just kind of day roles and extra roles, like right as I'd graduated high school. But I jumped into music instead to manage bands and everything. Right. And I'd always see so many great comics, and I was like, yeah, I should look into doing that. And it just never. And now I look back and I'm like, oh, I really wish I would have started on that forever ago. And really immersed myself in it. But, I mean, like you said, you have to be more aware of everything.
Right.
And it's like, I look at where I was at a year and a half or 2 years ago or so, when I first decided to even, you know, do a comedy podcast.
Right.
And I realized how much I really had to just observe everything around me. It's like, I already felt like I was pretty up to date on everything. I always, you know, knew what was going on in the news and what I could make fun of. But I realized that even being a comic, you really have to be able to extend beyond that. And know the comedy community, too, and what, you know, what's kind of popular, what people are laughing at.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that's what killed George Lopez. I mean, it was like, there's only so many Kardashian jokes you can really do about the same thing, man.
There's only 35 in 1 hour set that you can do.
So I used to, because he would come on right after Conan, and I used to joke with my wife, watch, I'll do his entire monologue in 2 minutes here. So, yeah, it'd be Kardashian joke, I'm Hispanic, here's a penis joke. And it was, and we could just sit there and check them off, because it was that predictable.
Right.
And I think that's why, you know, you see sometimes comics like that just kind of, you know, fall by the wayside, because they don't stay current and, you know, keep that observation.
And then they get
up.
Kind of just stuck in their demographic.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of what he's done. I mean, which he's still pretty popular, but...
Yeah.
To the, like, the wider range, and that's probably why his show didn't work, is because he was just funneling too much to one demographic, one subject, and people got disinterested.
Yeah, I mean, I just saw George Lopez late in that show, and I was disinterested.
That's why I like the Pete Holmes new show on TBS. I'm like diehard every night, because I think he's so dorky and so like awkward. That I think most of us are that way in a way, so I think that's why that show works.
That's what I like, is that he didn't want to make it your typical late night show.
Right.
He wanted it to still have that late night feel, but his own thing, and I love the way that he's done it. I think it's been absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, my wife loves that, like, every time that he breaks in the middle of an interview and just, like, sticks his hands over his face. Like,
yeah.
And it's just like, why does he do that? It's just who he is. And that's why he's so endearing, I think, to a lot of people.
It's the same, I think, with even Chris Hardwick, when you watch him on At Midnight.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when he just completely loses it, where he doesn't make a noise. You can tell he's just laughing that hard, and he just kind of holds it.
Right.
And I love seeing comics just in the moment like that.
Right.
So I think that's why both of their shows are being as successful as they are. And I think it's funny that you mentioned the Adam Sandler albums. Because that was probably my first real bit where I really started to dive into it, when I was in probably like 7th grade. And I remember the Goat song came out. And my friends would make me do the voice. And I would sing. I had the filthiest mouth of any, like, eighth grader there probably was. Because I could sing that entire song and do that entire bit. Yeah. So, and it drove teachers nuts. Because at the same time, I mean, Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore were the big things.
Right.
And I would walk around the entire school just going, "No, shampoo is better." And they would just, you know, glare at me. They would be pissed, but I was having a good time and I was making people laugh.
Right.
But I've never heard anybody else other than you say, "Yeah, Adam Sandler," because it's like now people are like, "Oh, yeah, Adam Sandler. Yeah, he hasn't made a good movie since those other ones."
Yeah, and I think if you ask most people, like most comedians, I think it will end up going back to him because we are all, you know, at least ones that are kind of like in their late 20s, early 30s, because he was like when we were kids, he was it. Like it was him and Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
And that's how most of us got introduced to comedy, I think, in some way or another, because those were the most popular comedy movies back then. And it just kind of pushed us down that path of trying to be that goofball. You know, like you said, you would go around and do the voices. And my wife actually, at one point, had every word of Billy Madison memorized. She could talk the whole movie all the way through. And she's not a huge comedy fan, but she memorized the entire movie. And so I don't think people give him enough credit for inspiring generations of comedy. Because, you know, you talk to people, his albums, like, and his comedy specials, the Hanukkah song and stuff like that. Everyone quotes those still.
Yeah, I mean, I still listen to What the Hell Happened to Me and They're All Gonna Laugh at You all the time. I mean, they were, the fact that he basically took sketch comedy and made it into an album is what, to this day, just kind of blows my mind, because nobody was really doing that at the time. Yeah. I mean, they were releasing their HBO specials. Those were the albums you could buy. I mean, I know I had a couple of the Bill Cosby albums then. I hid a couple of the old Eddie Murphy albums.
Yeah.
Because those weren't allowed in the house. But
I had to listen to Adam Sandler, like, in my room at, like, 11:30 at night. I'd recorded it from my friend, stuck it in my, like, little crappy boombox with headphones.
Yeah. that was exactly what I was doing. I think I went through at least five or six copies of What the Hell Happened to Me, because I would put it between my mattress and my parents would find it. I would stash it somewhere else and my parents would find it. And I loved that I knew there were kids that were hiding porn under their mattress and I was hiding comedy and music.
Yeah, I kind of had to do the same thing because, you know, I liked, rock music and it was a lot. And my parents were really strict. And so, I know how I feel. It's like I had to hide my, like, I'm gonna expose myself for how '90s I was. Like, hide all my 311 albums.
No, I was the exact same way. All my 311 albums. When Eminem first came out, I had all of those hidden.
my Limp Bizkit albums. I'm sorry, everybody.
See, what's funny is I actually went back recently and listened to some of those Limp Bizkit albums as I was like, I was taking a ton of crap over to Graywell, and. For those of you not in Salt Lake, Graywell's our CD exchange out here. For those of you that are, you know, under 20, a CD, it's the little round disc that your parents might have. So just
you
ask
put
them
it,
about
it. You put in this big, huge player that you have to, like, have a shelf for normally.
Yeah.
Or you those big, round, like...
the Walkmans.
Walkmans that you actually had to wear a backpack. Isn't that what you had to do? Wear a backpack. And then you had to walk really, really
so it didn't skip.
Slow. Because the anti-skip is a bloody lie.
I mean, up until like 2007, I still had one of those.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I couldn't afford an iPod. And so I would, you know, be on, I hate to say it, I would go on LimeWire for comedy and stuff. Because that way I could find some of it, and then I lost like three computers through LimeWire, but I would use that, and I'd go out and run every morning. I mean, clearly that's been since 2007 at this point, but...
Yeah, I ran cross country in high school, and so, not anymore.
Yeah, I always had my little anti-shock, and it wasn't until one morning that I finally turfed it while out running, that I was like, all right, I somehow need to afford an iPod now.
Yeah, and you probably had those, like, you didn't have earbud headphones because they were very You had like those weird, awkward, like cheapy plastic ones with the little fuzzy.
Had those, and then I had the ones that would wrap around your head and like grab onto yours. And I know they still make those somewhat, but even those have like completely fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, when you run with those, they'd like.
Yeah. You'd get somebody's mailbox or something if you're out jogging on the street, and a flag would grab it and choke you. Oh, the good old 90s. I do miss the 90s sometimes.
That's good stuff.
And I wasn't even that old to really have as fond of memories of the 90s.
How old are you?
So I'll be 30 this year.
30. Okay, so you graduated in...
02.
Okay. Yeah, I was all 90s. I graduated in 99. I'm 33. Most people think I'm... It's weird. Most people think I'm either, like, 25 or, like, 36 because, like, the bags underneath my eyes.
So I don't... Like, it's funny when I talk to people and they'll think that, like, I'm still, like, early 20s. And I'm like, what are you telling me? Like, because I don't feel like I look like I'm in, like, my early, early 20s. Are you telling me I'm that immature in a way? Or...
I think when people say I look younger, it's, like, how I present myself.
Yeah.
Because people that know me, like, I'm very specific about how I dress most of the time. You know, I wear a bow tie when I'm on stage. It's kind of like my calling card. But I try to dress younger because... I'm still trying to grab on to...
you're clinging to your youth.
I'm clinging to my youth. Because, I mean, I don't want to be 40 and boring. And so I think that's probably with you because you're a big movie fan. You're big.
Yeah.
You know, you're wearing an Iron Man shirt right now and a RVCA hat. And I think you just present yourself as younger and people think it. I think that's probably why...
Works for me.
I like it because I don't want to be thought as old. No way.
Yeah, maybe, it's got to be all the comic book shirts that I wear and stuff like that.
I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, you can see kind of when people kind of vanilla eyes, I just made that word up, themselves. They just kind of like, they don't, I don't know. I like standing out. And I think, you know, same with you. It's just like, I like what I like and it's younger. And if you think I'm younger, that's cool.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things I've tried to do even lately is I try to find a comedy shirt or a funny shirt that I know nobody else is going to have.
Right.
So, and every so often I'll have people stop me and be like, where did you get that shirt? And I won't tell them. Or I'll send them on a wild goose chase because...
You're like, I want this for me.
Like, one that I wear here and there has Abraham Lincoln on it with a mohawk.
Sweet.
And I get stopped every time with that. And people are always like, where did you find that? I'm like, I don't know.
It's a gift, maybe? Yeah, I have a Abraham Lincoln one with just headphones on. But it's like bright orange and yellow and pink and stuff, so I think...
Well, while I was out in LA, I tried to scoop up a bunch of Riot Society shirts because we don't get a ton of them out here.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite ones, it's a presidential shirt and it says, take a stand. But it has the Founding Fathers doing a keg stand instead.
There you go.
And I was like, hey, that's not going anywhere near Utah. I think that violates our liquor laws. So.
Behind the Zion curtain. You'd have to wear that shirt behind the Zion curtain. Yeah. There's this really cool designer. I think he's in Australia or something. His name is Glenn Z. And I think like he designs these really like awesome, really well illustrated shirts
What's his shirt called?
I think Glenn Z is what he's called.
I think I've actually ordered some of those. I think I have one of Spock where he's doing the Vulcan symbol but into a lamp and it's a cool party trick, so it's making a dog instead.
Yeah, yeah. And then he has like what, he just has a ton of really cool shirts that, you know, he puts them in contests and stuff, but he's probably done like 200 or 300 of them. So they're,
oh wow.
And they're pretty amazing. So
yeah, I know I've ordered a few of his shirts. That and $6 shirts.
Yeah.
As soon as I found that site, that was the worst thing I could have found.
Yeah.
I think the last order I did there, because my wife even ordered a few of them, and I think we spent about $90 on the site.
And you have a full new wardrobe.
Yeah.
You have like 18 shirts.
It was terrible when I discovered that. And it's like I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm laughing at t-shirts. Like, I mean, I think one of my favorites that I just got, it has the Oregon Trail on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just says underneath that you have died from dysentery. And that one, I saw that, and I was like, I have to have that.
That's awesome.
There was one other that had a, it looks like the E.T. logo with him flying through the moon.
Mm-hmm.
But it was called Willy's Escape. And I could tell it was Alf in the basket. And then as I looked closer, it's Willy riding Alf up through the moon. And that one I had to have.
Yeah, I have that same problem. Like, I think I have more shirts than my wife does, so.
I know for a fact I do. My entire family makes fun of me for it. But it's, the years working in music, you got hooked up with a lot of free crap.
Yeah.
And so, like, I go through some of them, I'm like, I haven't even seen this shirt before. I don't know where it came from. I'm pretty sure my shirts are reproducing at this point. And, I mean, my closet is just becoming disgusting. And it's, I've continually been downsizing, but it doesn't look like I've made a dent in it.
Yeah. Like, I think I have shirts that I just like, I'll wash that later. And they've probably been sitting there for probably about 9 months. It's like, I'll get to you. I have like 7 other new shirts I bought this month that I...
When I used to work for a sports retailer, I was always collecting jerseys.
Mm.
And I just the other day I was going through, because I was like, I'm not going to throw a bunch of these up on eBay. And I was like, kept going through, and I was like, why did I buy all of this? Like, I was buying some to just collect, like, some of the, like, rare LeBron James or rare Kobe Bryant jerseys. And, yeah, I'm getting through some of them. I'm like, why do I have this? This is... It got to the point that, yeah, my clothing just got out of control.
And then you look at them, it's like, why did this player ever have a jersey made for them?
Yeah.
It's like, he was like a third-string wide receiver. And
yeah, I look forward to putting them up on eBay and then having somebody claim that they're fake and having to send them back and losing my money. So,
yeah, I think I had an Anthony Hardaway jersey when I was a kid. That was...
I think somewhere... So there's randomly, I think I have it here. Yeah, look at this.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
1994-95 Orlando Magic team photo with their copied signatures on there, and good old Penny Hardaway, and even Shaq.
Yeah, right there. Yeah, Shaq and Nick Scott. That's funny that you just have this like randomly in a reachable area of your house. Was that the year that they went against Houston in the finals?
I can't remember. Like, yeah, no, that would have been. Those would have been the back-to-back years for the Rockets.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
What's funny is that's the second time somebody's made an obscure reference, and I've had something for it within arm's reach. I know when I had Melissa Merlot on, I think it's in one of these prop boxes over here. She'd brought up a noose, and I had a noose just sitting here because we had recently used it as a prop.
It was just like, hello.
Yeah, it's getting a little worrisome. I'm just going to try to start.
Stuff.
Yeah. And like so much of it's boxed up because it's like when we moved back from LA, I was like, I'm not making this permanent. Like I'm getting back to LA. So if I don't need to unbox it, it's staying boxed up.
Right.
So it's been like, you know, some of it staying boxed up. And then it was like, well, we still have to use this as a studio space for like film, for recording the podcast.
Right.
It's like, yeah, we have to make it somewhat homely.
Yeah. Why did you move back to Salt Lake from LA?
When we moved out there, it seemed like there was a lot of jobs that were all pretty much a go.
Right.
And then as I hit the pavement, was going to interviews and everything. I mean, I interviewed with Warner Brothers for over a month.
Oh, wow.
And then everything kind of crashed and burned, and it was just like, oh, wow, so I don't have a job. And like we'd looked at it, and our apartment had a buyout, or not a buyout, but they just had an opt-out. Where at a certain point, the contract locked in, and then you were stuck for the year.
Right.
So, but otherwise, they gave you time to, you know, put in a notice. And then from there, you still had like another 30 days, and you could still cancel it up to that 30 right. days. So they basically gave us several months where we could...
Kind of play it.
Yeah, kind of play it, figure it all out. But when I looked at it, I was like, I'm not going to be held liable for 17 grand, like over a year. To hope that like I find like a good stable job,
right?
So and at the same time, I had called my job back here and said, "Hey, so I may have to end up moving back. Like, am I rehireable and all that?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, you're totally rehireable." And then they didn't start me after moving back for another 4 months.
You're like, "Oh, thanks."
And I was like,
a lot.
"Thanks, fellas. I would have just stayed out there."
Yeah.
But I mean, it's been good. It's been good to come back and
right.
and jump in. I mean, a lot of things have fallen into place that probably wouldn't have.
That's cool.
So I kind of have to look at it as everything. Some, you know, it happens for a reason.
Right.
So now it's like I know I'm in a better position to go back to Los Angeles. Right. And
yeah. have a little more footing.
Yeah, a lot more footing. Yeah,
here you can be like, I was in LA. Mm.
Yeah. What's funny is how much, like, the week I came back, like, the film teachers out here were so cool about it because they already knew me and everything. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to be starting classic 2 weeks late, but, you know, I'll send in any assignments I can. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, just do what you can. And the day I got back, like, half of the class was like, you were the one that just came from LA, right? And I was like, yeah. Yeah, you've been there, right? Disneyland, hey? And like, it was a weird feeling, and then it took them a couple of weeks to realize, oh, it's just some other jackass from Utah. Like, then they all treated me normally. But yeah, it was weird.
Or worse.
Yeah, or worse in some instances. But no, it was a weird... I was really bitter and angry about it for a while.
Right.
But it got down to it that now I look at it and I'm like, I wouldn't have had so many of the opportunities that I have, right, that I've had now.
Yeah, everything kind of has its plan and so forth. You need to go there, make some connections, and then
bring it
back here, grow, and then go back.
Yeah, awesome. And I think too, you know, with comedy, it's been something that it's part of what I think what's forcing me to be like, okay, you have to really, you know, take a run at this. You have to make it work now.
Right.
So, because at this point, some of the actors that I've been working with on the job interview, as we kind of pick things up in the fall, all of us are actually planning to get out to LA and start into the Groundlings program.
Oh, cool.
So, because we were like, we know how to improv a little, but we want to really just take a run at it and be able to just say, hey, look, we did this, and you know, what happens, happens. But, right. I mean, there's too many, you know, great comics, great writers that have come out of Groundlings. And so we're like, yeah, we're going to make this happen this fall.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think like Mike Grover and Jordan Brown from Logan, I think they just finalized their Kickstarter. And they're going to be kind of doing that same type of thing where they just kind of, they grow here and then they go there. I think they're doing UCB or something.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be talking to Mike, I think, this Saturday.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, because I wanted to know more about their thing. Because yeah, we were looking at UCB and Groundlings. And I looked at kind of the way that Groundlings pushes it out there, and I was like, basically I can go to school at Groundlings for the same cost I can go to school here and live in one of the hostels for a couple of weeks at a time. Because all of us were like, all right, how cheap can we do this? We're like, well, I can live in a hostel. I mean, I've seen the movies, so I think I know how to survive.
I'll just make sure I have a machete.
as long as I have some type of sharp object, I should be good.
Yeah, and they just pump people out. Yeah. It's crazy. You, like, look at Saturday Night Live and like, Mad TV, and it's just, like, so many people from Groundlings. And
yeah, and that was a big part of it. And, like, I had talked to Arden Marine. She was in studio with us this last week, and just kind of briefly asked her about it, and she was like, do it. She's like, it's career-changing when you get out there, and especially, you know, the way that they just kind of, you know, drill it into you. To get you, you know, to be up to standard. They don't want people that are just going to come in and just be like, I think I might want to try improv.
Right.
They want people that are, you know, going to come in, hit the ground running, and even in their, you know, beginning workshop classes before you audition for the rest of it. It's like, you know, I like that they're setting you up to succeed, and if you don't, sorry, but I love the way that their program's set up, and I'm even going to try, you know, some of the improv groups out here over the next few months to just at least get that footing to be able to go on.
Yeah, that's kind of my next step too, is I've been talking with Bob DeBoer and Jason Wild over at Quick Wits and trying to, you know, go over there and play with them a little bit, and I just need to get over there because, you know, I love improv too. I think sometimes it gets a bad rap, especially from the stand-up community as a whole.
Yeah.
But I think doing that will help my stand-up, and me doing stand-up will help when I start improv, too.
Yeah.
Just kind of, like, be able to play off things a little more, you know, pull things that you write, you know, and from improv and use them in your writing and stuff like that. So I think that's really cool. And those guys are really open to having new people.
Right.
Like, hang out with them and play with them and stuff, so... You know, when you start, I would hit them up for sure when you kind of want to start, like, start trying it a little more and everything.
No, that's
I think they're way willing. Yeah, Quick Wits in Murray. I think every Friday and Saturday at 10 is when their shows are. Oh, I think cool. What I've been doing, I've went and checked out a few shows and then kind of see how their flavor is. Because they're different than, like, Laughing Stock. Mm-hmm. And so kind of see their flavor and how I kind of fit in with that. And so hopefully I can start that soon.
Yeah, the creature of improv, I think, is just... It's so fascinating watching how people can take nothing and create something. One of the videos we're about to release probably this weekend for the job interview, we improvised the entire thing.
Oh, cool.
We're like, all right, like we said, okay, this is our basic idea. Let's turn on the cameras and go.
Wow.
And I mean, we think it came out absolutely hilarious. I mean, it wasn't at all what I expected it was going to be. But the fact that none of us cracked the entire time was the most amazing part.
I think that would be the hardest part for me when I started. It was just like, just trying not to like lose it.
Yeah, and I attribute that to the fact that I've worked with great actors, because I am mediocre at best. Right. So, and I attribute the fact that, I mean, so many great actors, I've been able to learn from them and see kind of what they do to keep their composure during it. So, but I mean, then there's, I mean, we were shooting a scene a couple weeks ago, and for one of the episodes that Jay Whittaker's in,
mm-hmm.
and we were all so off book for the entire thing. Like, we knew the premise of the scene just fine. I mean, hell, I wrote it. So it's like, I knew my part spot on. But Jay decided to throw in some bits of his own. And I was doing, it was just a two shot of just Jay and I on the couch. He's talking to one of the other characters. And so, like, I'm knowing I really have to keep it together. I can't crack at all. And he makes one joke, and I mean, my character is kind of detached from everybody else as it is throughout it, and I just lost it. I was almost in tears because it was just so funny. But we have a different ending to that scene now, because we just let Jay and Johnny Byrne, who's in the scene with them, we just let the two of them go.
Yeah.
And the scene ended up going like an extra 2 minutes, and we were like, it was gold. We have to keep that.
Yeah. You hear about, like, in movies, you know, where they just, like, what movie? There's, I think Will Ferrell does a lot of that in his movies, where they just kind of like, hey, here's this, and they just go off. And so I think it makes up for a lot of the more entertaining aspects.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I think sometimes you can see, and, you know, I don't know much about, you know, filming and writing for movies and web series and stuff like that. But, you know, sometimes I think if you stick too close to your writing, it kind of gets... You can tell that it's acted instead of just played out. And so
I know on even The Wolf of Wall Street, they actually... There's a bunch of scenes in that were just kind of randomly thrown in there.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, even the whole part where Matthew McConaughey is just kind of just... That's actually just his warm-up. That's what he does to warm up. And they liked that.
So it
made it into the movie and is now kind of like an ongoing joke amongst people.
That's awesome.
So I was like, wow, like, it's totally serious. Like, he wasn't even trying to make a joke, and it wound up in there.
Yeah. I think it just makes it more approachable than just being, like, strictly written. And I think that's what I'm trying to do with stand-up, too, is just kind of like, I write my stuff, but I'm trying to make it seem like it's just kind of going. You know, definitely something I struggle with, because I'm so like, these are the orders I'm doing my jokes, but.
So when you do write, I mean, do you write the joke completely out, or do you mostly just give yourself notes of what you're going to do?
I go back and forth, I think. Like, when I initially come up, I have Evernote on my phone, just like right now, this morning. While I was, before I got here, let's just see a few dumb stuff that I said. Let's see. Like, this morning while I was getting ready, I realized that I have a specified butt soap that I use. That I don't use it on any other part of my body, but I just have a bar of soap that I just use for my butt. So I was like, what if I accidentally use that to wash my hands one day? And so I just wrote down butt soap. And then, you know, a couple weeks from now, I'll get a pen and paper and write it out and formulate it. I think That's kind of how I work. I do the idea, sit on the idea for a while, and then I write it down, and then I try it out.
And then you just let it grow from there.
Yeah, because I think if there's some that you can like, oh, that's good, and you just go straight up. And then there's others where you kind of like, all right, I need to write it down. Because I have a joke about how Chuck E. Cheese and strip clubs are similar. And I've been sitting on it for like, I don't know, like 8 months. And I had the topic, you know, I thought of a few tags, but not until like a month ago I actually wrote out the whole joke with all the tags, and then I used it at K-Town Comedy in Kearns, and it went over really well. And I think thinking a joke like that out helps it be able to present a little bit more when it's a little more involved. But yeah, kind of fly by the seat of my pants a lot of the time with jokes.
I know how that goes, though. I mean, I've had one that I started writing a couple weeks ago that was, I wonder how pissed off Fox News will be if it just turns out that Jesus was marrying Joseph's Hispanic gardener. Which then turned around and opened up into just like an entire just like religion bit instead that I did, that I've been working on, going into the fact of, you know, well, there wasn't a lot of carpenters back in the day. I mean, what the hell were they building? I mean... stables and crosses. He was going like full circle with this.
Right.
So, and were there like rival cross makers? Like, did he get put up on the wrong person's cross? Like, you know, this is a Fardman.
Or is it like, wait, I made this.
I made this. What?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and he was like, he didn't really live in a house for the large part of his ministry.
Yeah.
And so it's like, so were you just unemployed? You couldn't find carpentry work?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was freeloading on the system.
Right.
So I love it when you do just have that note of just like one joke. And kind of even my wrap-up to that was, as I was thinking about the industry of being a carpenter then, and you know, making the joke about, you know, him dying, is, well, then, you know, we have mortuary men today. Did they have tomb salesmen like that? They'll just walk around and your limestone is in this one.
Do you want this rock to roll over to be like?
How do you want it to roll, to the left or to the right? So now, with this new comedy show that you have coming, this is something you completely put together—the stand-up showcase.
Right, right. I've been thinking for, you know, six, seven months now. I wanted to do my own show, and I wasn't sure exactly how I wanted to do it, where I wanted to do it. I have a cousin; his name's Kendrick Zane. He's one of the dueling piano players at Keys on Main.
Okay.
And I've been there, you know, I've been there a bunch. And it's just such a perfect venue. It's wide. They have the nice center stage right there in the middle. They have the perfect spotlights. I mean, I think it's better than a lot of your bars and stuff because it's a true performance venue. I think on the bar scene of comedy in Salt Lake, we kind of have to fudge our stages a lot of the time. I think Five Monkeys has a really good stage, but a lot of the stages are kind of forced.
Yeah.
You know, they put a box in the middle of a restaurant. Or
stand on this apple crate and we'll hand you a mic.
Right. But I went there, I'm like, this is such a perfect venue for comedy. It, you know, perfect sound system. You know, yeah, they have three big, huge 50-inch TV screens behind it. And so as a graphic designer, I'm like, oh, I'll put awesome graphics behind it. And I, you know, I definitely have a lot of ideas. And another thing about it is that I think thinking really hard and really trying to put on a great show is important because people can see your effort.
Right.
And so, you know, I think a lot of shows, you know, they don't print posters, don't do real tickets. And I think, doing that type of stuff, just a little bit extra, helps really people notice it. But what I'm more excited about even than that is that the seven comics that I asked were actually willing to do it.
Yeah.
I tried to really get a wide range of comedians on the show. Like, you know, Jay Whitaker, who's like one of the biggest names in Utah comedy. I think he's so diverse because he brings the nerd into it. He brings like, because he's a slick dude, he brings like the charisma and stuff into it. And I was really happy that he agreed to do it. And then, you know, like Be Real, who I don't know if you're familiar with Brent Be Real Robinson.
He always pops up on the people I should be friends with on Facebook. But
he's a really cool guy. He's only been doing comedy for like 14 months, and he's doing shows like in Vegas at like the Wynn.
Oh wow!
And he doesn't live there, and so it's like he's doing. And he told me that he's doing some show at like the Apollo in New York, which is insane. Dang. And he's been doing comedy for 14 months. I mean, he already has like a 45 minute set that he does. And, you know, and he's done it his own way. I think that's what's really cool about it is that, you know, I don't think he took the normal wise guys open mic every night. He took his route of working through the clubs, working through places like One and some of the other clubs downtown to really get a following. Cause he can bring people.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then I'm really good friends with Nicholas, and I think bringing a dark side to the show is kind of fun. And then, you know, Abby Harrison,
Abby's incredible. I'm talking with her later on this week as well. So, and she's fantastic.
It's just, I think she has one of the most unique deliveries in town. Like that kind of stare off into the distance and do like just this really odd.
Just completely
quirky,
deadpan.
Yeah, it's so great. And then Jackson, who I think in a couple of years will all be like, I knew that guy when he does his hour special on Comedy Central. And so I was really happy to get the group of comics that I was able to get. And Jason Harvey, love him, he's great. And Michael Schooley, who's been my friend for one of my first comedy friends, I'd say. So, and I just think the wide variety, I think, will kind of take everybody in. So
that's good. I mean, it's great to get that variety too. I think the only show that I've ever seen that, at least out here, that really had some good variety was when they did the Geek Show benefit show last September, like mid-September. And it had, you know, a handful of these guys on it. So I know Abby was part of that. Jay was on that. And it really was cool to be able to get, you know, a real difference of comedy. There was one comic that was on it that was not my styling at all. That I was just like, all right, you've had your time. Like, go. But I mean, for the most part, it was good to have, you know, that diversity up there, so that everybody, you know, got a good laugh. I mean, some of us love the dry comics, some of us love just the real, you know, here's your joke on a platter.
Right.
So, and it makes it nice to have that mix up. So.
And hopefully, I'm trying to add a few little surprises in there too. I'm trying to work that out with a few people. So. I'm not gonna just put 8 comics up.
And yeah.
Like, I'm gonna try to do some different little things too. And so hopefully the venue fits 180, and I'm hoping we can sell it out. Because I think if we sell it out, it will show to Keys on Main that we need to do it.
Yeah, it needs to be something regular.
Yeah, do it monthly, and that it's a real asset to them.
Yeah.
You know, it's a way that they can get people in on a day that they're normally closed, and I think it's a great opportunity for everybody.
Yeah, plus, if they see it from the comedy club aspect, too. I mean, most clubs make their money on the food and the beverage.
Right.
So, and I mean, Keys on Main will clean up on that.
Right. Especially if we can sell 180 people for two and a half hours. And you know, so I think it'll be really great. So I'm really excited. I'm nervous because, you know, I'm hosting it, and I'm hoping I do a good job. But I'm really excited because, you know, I put a lot of work into it, and I hope it comes out really well. So,
awesome. Well, before I let you go, one last thing is your blog. It's always funny in Salt Lake. How did you really start that?
I started it last September. Last September, I had a 4-month break from stand up. My mother-in-law had open heart surgery, and she had a bunch of complications and stuff. So me and my family decided I would take a break from stand-up, and I didn't want to lose everything I had
kind of
built up to that point. At that point, it wasn't a lot, but it was some. But I wanted to stay visible in the community, and slugged us some comedy interviews here and there, and Gavin's Underground does comedy interviews once a month, but we didn't really have anything that focused just on comedians. And so I found as like a really great opportunity for people just to learn about stand-up, like the great comedians we have here locally. And so, you know, I just kind of started asking people. I've done them almost every week for, I took 4 weeks off in March, but I think I've done almost 30 interviews now.
Nice.
And so, you know, I think it's a great, and it just gives people awareness how great local comedy is. Because I think people think, why is guys, you know, big celebrity coming in? Mm-hmm. But we have this huge crop of great, great comedians that are so diverse. And so I think that's just kind of an opportunity for just the general public to kind of, to learn about them on a personal level. And, you know, I don't take it too serious. I usually start off my interviews with, like, three or four completely ridiculous questions about nut baloney.
Yeah.
And, you know, I ask them, you know, most people, it's like, tell us about yourself. I'm like, tell us about yourself in 10 words or less. Because it just kind of, like, it condenses it and makes it so you have to think. I was talking with Marcus about my blog, and he says, I think he... reason said he said he liked it so much was that as stand-up comedians in a podcast, we can kind of bullcrap a little bit.
Yeah.
It's just like I can throw out words and tell the questions. But, you know, but with a blog, you have to think about every single word that you say.
Yeah, it has to be concise.
It has to be concise. You know, it has to make sense most of the time. But so he's like, it as a, it kind of helps you as a comedian because it helps you write your thoughts down and that converts to your writing. So I thought that was really cool of him to say that about the blog. And so, and I'm really, really hoping that I can kind of expand it a little more to, you know, I want to start a podcast where I kind of go back and forth between the blog and the podcast. And then I also want to try to get bigger names. Kind of like how you're doing, you do some of the local guys, and then you have like Pete Holmes, Tracy Morgan, have some of these bigger names kind of just make appearances here and there to kind of, you know, solidify, validate what you're doing. And so hopefully I can get that to happen eventually.
So, well, you did have Bill Belmay on.
No, for an interview, I didn't. Oh. I think the biggest name, I had Jenna Kim Jones, which has done your podcast. You know, Ben Washburn, who's been on Conan, and I had him on, and Marcus, of course, who was Last Comic Standing. So I, you know, I have some of the bigger local names, which hopefully can eventually parlay into some of the bigger.
So at least now Bill Belmay knows who you are, because the only reason I thought you had is because he actually mentioned it when he was at X96 with us.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Richie and I were talking to him about it, and so, I know somehow it got brought up. But I do know that when we had talked with him, he had said something about it.
About the It's Always Funny in Salt Lake City blog. Interesting.
So that's why I thought that he was on, is because I remember talking to him about it.
Well, I will have to hit him up now. He will be my first big guest. That's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah, all this time I thought he had been on with you.
Yeah. Well, no, I wish
we'll just keep it that he has. And...
Yeah, it was an awesome interview. It was great. Made fun of how white I was.
No, I over the weekend when Arden Marine was in town, we had her on Radio from Hell.
Cool.
And they made me look like an absolute ass in front of her. And it was... I mean, that's just what they do for me. But I was filming her interview so I could throw it up on YouTube. And about 3-4 minutes into the interview, Bill just stops and says, yeah, this guy over here is about to pee his pants when he heard you were coming in today. And I was just like, okay, I was excited because I like her. I was not about to pee my pants.
But I am now.
Yeah. And then it just turned around to, and who's the creepy guy with the camera? Because I just walked in and just holding, but it was just on my iPhone at that. And so it made it just that much more awkward. And I was just like...
What are you going to do with that footage afterwards? That's awesome.
So, well, cool. I'm glad to see that, you know, so much of this has been going so well for you. I mean, when I saw the blog first pop up, I was like, oh, this is a cool idea. I like this. So I started reading it, you know, right away. And it's been great. And I think, you know, your comedy, you know, from what I've seen has been fantastic. And I really hope that everybody gets out to the showcase. I think it's going to sell out pretty quickly, especially, I mean, we're... What, 20 days from it? 19 days from it now.
Right.
So, I mean, it's going to go fast, and I think especially with that lineup. It's going to be excellent.
You have to go.
Yeah.
It will finish your Memorial Day weekend in joy and happiness. After thinking
It is Memorial Day weekend.
After thinking about your dead relatives.
See, I never think about the dead relatives over Memorial Day. I think of, hey, I have a 3-day weekend.
Yeah. Like, why have someone die. You guys all murder someone that you love, and then you'll think about them every year on that day.
I think I'd think more about them on the day I killed them, though. As I said, in my cell, I'm like it's that 1-year anniversary. Chalk another one up. Awesome. Next day, you have the tally of the first time you were raped in jail, too. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Jordan. I'm glad that we were able to get together. And awesome. Where can everybody find you on social media?
I have a website that hosts the blog. It's Jomazz Comedy, JOMAZZ comedy.com. And then I have a tab that's always funny in Salt Lake City on there, so you can check out all the interviews I've done. I have some good ones coming up. Jason Harvey this week. And a bunch of other people I can't remember at this moment because I haven't planned ahead like 2 months. So Levi Rounds is going to be on there, Christian Piper. And I've been trying to get Jay on there, but he's so busy. But on Twitter, just Twitter/JoeMazzComedy. And then Facebook, I think it's Jordan Mazziotti Comedian. And then I think that's it. I think that's all the YouTube. People make fun of me because I'm only a year and a half in, and I already have all of the all the social media specified for comedian stuff.
No, I mean, after about a year of My House on the Moon, I created my own fan page. Not because I thought anybody wanted to be a fan, but it was how I could kick family members off of my regular page that I didn't want anything to do with. And just be like, hey, I'm deleting my Facebook. Go like this page, and that way I can keep up with you.
Right.
And that way I could get rid of them, and I don't pay attention to my fan page.
Right.
So they're still on there, and I don't have to worry about it.
You don't have to see their annoying posts about, like, the tender mercies of church or something.
What was great is at my brother's wedding last year, one of my aunts comes up to me, and she's like, I haven't seen you on Facebook forever. Where have you been? And my wife and I are both sitting there like, that's because we deleted you. Like, hey, we're still there. I don't know. Do you have your privacy settings? Cool. Thank you so much, Jordan. Everybody get out. That's in Utah to Keys on Main, May 25th. What time is that? 7:30.
7:30, yep. Doors will open at 7.
Perfect. So. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Jordan.
$8. $10 at the door.
$10 at the door. Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And we'll see you at the showcase.
Yeah. Awesome.